Welcome to the Minivade Gang Barbershop Quartet. No, it's the podcast, episode 303. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Still celebrating that Lakeville North hockey win last
night. Oh, yeah. Who's the other guy? Oh, yeah, Graham Thickens.
Oh, yeah. I'll be watching that big matchup tonight against Duluth East, yeah.
Nice. Right. And Phil Wilson, who will be watching Gilmore Girls.
Actually...
Reruns.
Actually, I just wanted to tell you, I'm reporting from Ground Zero here in Lakeville, where there's been a massive explosion.
Really?
Yeah. It's the didn't you see the news this morning? We made the news. A food truck blew up in somebody's driveway.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, blew up about 11 o'clock last night. We heard it, too. You didn't hear that last night, Tim? It was over by you.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, about 11 o'clock, a food truck parked in some guy's driveway exploded. It was the Motley Crue food truck.
Oh, yeah, they're opening a restaurant downtown.
Well, here's Bring Me the News. Multiple houses damaged as food truck explosion rocks Lakeville Street. Oh, my God.
I got a kick out of the, the cause is a propane-related explosion. It's like, no, really? Either that or they were turning it into a rolling meth lab or something.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
Well, thank
funny. Goodness, thank goodness nobody was hurt, that's for sure.
Well,
that's
what makes it
funny. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Well, the insurance company was hurt.
Yeah, right.
That's true. That's
be
true.
Bleeding for years. Yeah.
But you know, think if that would have happened at lunchtime on a street, you know, I mean, I always wonder about that stuff.
You know? Exactly. No, I agree with you, Graham. You think about it. It's like some of those things are not exactly what you would call, you look at them and you think, is that up to code? I don't know.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much to go wrong, you know, with propane. When I had my Airstream, my 67 Airstream, I never even wanted to turn that on. I never really needed to. I had a propane light inside and I had a propane furnace. It's like, I don't even want to mess with it. You know, it's too damn dangerous. So anyway. So,
well, there we go. So we probably should talk about technology in the land of 10,000 lakes, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. That's what we do.
We should. So Graham, you went to a couple events this week, right?
Yeah, I had an all-day Thursday and an all-day Friday. Thursday was the second year of the Midwest Capital Call, which was excellent and drew probably, gosh, a couple hundred, 250 people, it seemed like, filled the room at the Brave New Workshop on the first level there downtown. At a nice venue for something like that. It was a gathering of entrepreneurs and investors, and they managed to draw some folks from out of town. So we had, Wisconsin and Omaha, Nebraska represented, a Chicago VC. There were some excellent panels. I tweeted about it during the day and met a lot of great folks and ran into, the usual crowd, but even guys like Phil Soren showed up at it, which I thought was excellent, you know, now that he's part of the new Vidku startup.
Yep.
And it was an excellent all-day event. And then yesterday at another great venue, the Westin Galleria Hotel there by Southdale, Enterprise Rising was a first-time event that pulled off pretty well. I think it drew somewhere in the 100-150 range. And actually, a guy named Casey Allen, who I think you know, put this on with a bunch of volunteers. And he attracted a lot of really great speakers. But most of them were in-town folks, except for one noted VC, Seth Levine from Foundry Group, who had been on a panel the day before at Capital Call and was in town for Lead Pages, one of his portfolio companies. He stayed over till Friday morning and spent the morning at Enterprise Rising. So he was sort of the keynote interview in the beginning. But then we had some great stories from local enterprise focused startups, mostly software companies, of course. Chip Pearson from Jamp Software, David Bagley from Instratius, now Dell Cloud Manager, and Doug Berg from Jobs to Web. He's now got Trackif. Carson Kiffer from Sport Engine spoke too, and they all told their stories, which were great. You know, I knew some of it because three of them were my clients, but I'd never really heard them talk the whole story and go through how they built their companies and got them acquired in a couple of cases. Doug Berg's company and David Bagley's company were acquired for pretty large amounts. So it was fascinating and, great networking all day long. I think a lot of folks learned a lot at that thing. So, I know how hard it is to put it on an event like this. So I think Casey pulled off a pretty good one and he's going to do it again next year. So
very
good
nice.
For him.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I really loved an article that appeared that our pal Julio Jerez Zapata wrote about the Apple Watch is coming, but even tech fans aren't sold yet. And he starts off with the curmudgeon Tim Elliott, who is not convinced that that smartwatches are going to be all that important, Tim, right, Tim?
Tim, what's the deal on that? It was like, hey, you kids, get off my lawn.
Yeah, I just don't see it fitting into the way I work. I mean, maybe if I, and I said this in the email that I sent back to Julio, which he quotes at the beginning and the end of the story, that if I was a truck driver or I traveled a lot, maybe there would be utility in glancing at your wrist and seeing info. But everything that a smartwatch gives me, I get from my smartphone now, and I don't see that the benefit of having it on the wrist.
Okay.
And Phil, maybe it's something you have to try. Maybe it's like the iPad was also a interesting technology, but you have to try it before you really kind of get it. Maybe this is the same way. I don't know. I just, on its face, I just don't see it. And I've looked at, all of the Android Wear watches and the Pebble, of course, and they're interesting, but I just don't see how they would make my life any better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Phil, you had said in the article that, that you happily donned a Pebble smartwatch several years ago and that you will switch to an Apple Watch.
Yes, I will.
As soon as possible.
Several years ago. Didn't you get that last year?
Well, yeah, I backed it several years ago and then got it last year. I remember you, as you recall, that's been a couple of years now, I think, that was Kickstarter's biggest event. So thank you. That was Kickstarter's biggest success story to date. And then Pebble had a little bit of a hard time getting their shipping out in time. But no, I like it. And, the one thing that I was telling you guys just before we started the show is I spent a lot of time talking with Julio on that interview. We chatted for quite some time. And the one thing that I thought he would probably talk more about is just how incredibly great it is. The benefit of the watch is never, for me, has always been never missing a call, never missing a text, and never missing an email. Because when I'm carrying my smartphone, I silence it most of the time. And a lot of times I will miss a text or I will miss a phone call. But when I'm wearing my Pebble watch, which I don't wear exclusively, I never miss those things. And I think it's really handy for that. Now, my comment that he picked up on was that the challenge is going to be getting people to wear watches again, because though our generation grew up wearing watches, many generations, following us are not wearing watches anymore. With the advent of the smartphone, that sort of became the new pocket watch. So nobody really needs to wear a smartwatch now. So,
well, I'm in the camp though of reserving judgment until the thing comes out, because I think there's going to be a lot of use cases and things that it will do that we're not yet aware of.
Well, of course there will be, but also, I think the thing is that it's just you're willing to even consider a watch because you wear a watch. So
I do.
Well, don't you?
Well, no,
I've seen you wear a watch.
Yeah. Well, my kids gave me a really nice one, 2 years ago. for Christmas, and I've
yeah, but is it as nice
worn
as,
it like 10 times.
Is it as nice as Rolex boy there?
Yeah. I saw that in the article. Ooh.
Rolex. Tim Elliott wears a Rolex.
Yeah.
Indeed. Is that a real Rolex, or is that something you got in Tijuana?
No, it's a real one.
Nice.
And so when you wear, you know, a watch these days, and it's a piece of jewelry like that, it will not be easily replaced.
True. Right. It won't.
Right.
So that was sort of my point.
That's why I wear more than one watch, you know, because I still consider it an accessory.
So. Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Not,
we'll see.
I don't wear more than one watch at the same time, granted.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe that would be weird.
Maybe the money you save on a watch will let you go out and buy a 3D printer so we can keep Stratasys in the black.
Nice segue. Wow.
Nice, very segue.
They need more purchasers or something. But how about that write down for MakerBot? I mean, whoa.
Yeah.
They overpaid big time for that thing. Company.
So that's the question, is what's the utility of even a consumer grade 3D printer? What's the utility of that? Because we've talked about this before. It's like, what are you actually going to print with a 3D printer? I mean, how many people are doing prototyping?
You know, you're gonna make toys. I mean, it's a toy. You're gonna make toys, and you're gonna make, you know, wrist jewelry and, you know, just goofy stuff. I mean, in a way that, you know what this feels like to me in a way is I remember typing in an entire page of PostScript code in my Mac SE so that I could print a perfect circle. And I remember it took me like an hour to type it in, and I made a mistake and I had to go back and fix it and so on, because I mistyped something. And now, of course, you know, you draw a circle and you print it. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's almost like we need to get to another generation where you can actually create useful things.
Yeah, well, I still think the consumer market is, I don't see it blowing up to a big thing anytime soon, but the industrial and the medical uses, and Amazon just came out and said they foresee a day when the delivery guy will be printing your part out in the truck at your curb.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, but it could happen, you know. Now that's if you're ordering a part, you know, for some machine or appliance or something. But yeah, appliance parts break all the time, and obviously, you know, 3D printing has huge application in hardware kinds of parts. But consumers going to be printing their own appliance parts? Yeah, well, I guess techies are already doing that.
Well, I think I might have mentioned this before, but I don't know if you've ever watched Jay Leno's Garage. You know, this guy's just a nut about cars, and he's got all kinds of old cars. Well, he bought a next engine 3D scanner and printer from Stratasys so that they can actually make parts for old cars. And one of the things that he showed on one of these episodes was there was a plastic knob for the radio in a 1942 Plymouth or something. And they literally could not find one. And he says, I've got a guy that can find any, if it's available anywhere in the world, this guy will find it. And they literally couldn't find one anywhere. So they printed one, and they had to do it about 15 times, mixing the color. Uh-huh. And I swear to God, he had this guy zooming in with this HD camera, and you could not visually tell the difference. He said, it even feels the same.
Huh.
And so stuff like that. You know, and this next engine 3D printer can actually print metal. And so, they can actually make metal parts that you can't get any other place.
Yeah. So, that makes a big difference, but that's a lot pricier than the cheap plastic printers, obviously.
I'm sure it's a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Stratasys is having their problems with their stock after right. having to do that write down, but hopefully they've factored that in now, and they can go forward with the rest of their business. And, but they also claimed that it was, you know, difficulties with getting set up in all the consumer big box stores and all that, right? Didn't they talk about that?
Right. Well, they had to build displays and demos and all that stuff. Hey, by the way, I just looked this up. The Stratasys Dimension printer that Jay Leno's got is $34,900, and that's before consumables.
Jeez.
So I think it's going to be a while before we see these in people's homes.
Did Jay ever say what that knob actually cost? Did he figure?
No.
He could have had 70, 80 grand in that thing if you build in the cost of the printer. Of course, you can't do that. But
no, because they're using it for all sorts of stuff. But
my gosh, yeah.
Well, when you're like him, though, and you made $8 million or $12 million a year for who knows how many years, you can probably print a few $80,000 knobs.
Oh, yeah. The value of his car collection. Ooh, yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm glad I didn't buy. I was going to buy a bunch of Stratasys stock. I'm glad now I didn't buy it. Anyway, so. Hey, retail boy. Is he on still on the call?
Retail boy.
Okay. So tell us what's going on with our pals at Target and Best Buy.
Well, I put the story that they did on Sunday of Brian Cornell, which is, you know, the ego background story, the new guy making his mark. I put it in because, one, I thought it was a pretty good backgrounder, but two, it was obviously done as a PR plant before the bad news, which came out on Tuesday, that they're going to cut several thousand jobs over the next 2 years, most of which at headquarters,
right,
which, of course, will cause some problems with the real estate market probably in downtown Minneapolis, mm-hmm. I would think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just the standard corporate kind of, you know, downsizing. And, you know, that the new guy has got to do something different than the old guy because the old guy was a jerk. That's why he's gone. And hopefully he'll figure out what the right thing to do. But I don't know. I guess I'm going to wait and see here to see what they do. But if you work at Target and you're good, I'm sure you've got your resume on the street and you're calling headhunters.
Right. Well,
you know, because they're going to lose the good people. They're the bad people that they probably want to get rid of will still be there at the end.
Well, it's always
they're obviously, they're obviously, you know, saying, hey, you know, we're going to downsize this thing. So, you know, it's going to cause a lot of turmoil within Target.
Well, what I thought was interesting is I was listening to the radio and I was heading downtown here's a news bit about how Governor Dayton was all upset that they didn't give him a heads up in advance that they were doing this and that he was demanding a meeting so that they could discuss it.
Oh, God.
It's like, come on, seriously? I mean, what are they going to do? Go, oh, okay, we won't lay anyone off then.
What? Yeah. You sold the freaking company out, buddy. Come on, get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? If he was still the owner...
And this from the governor that was part of the Dayton family, which of course is the predecessor corp to Target Corp.
Right.
And he's the only one of the family they wouldn't let run the business.
And now he's running the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about scary. But anyway.
So
the big thing with the Target layoffs that I thought is how it's going to affect the downtown eateries and retailers and so forth. I mean, that, you know, a whole lot less people shopping and eating and drinking. So, you know, it's not good for the downtown economy.
Well, and living, look at all of the condos and townhomes and everything that are down there that, I've actually been noticing the ones that are over in the warehouse district, there seems to be a lot more, lofts and so on that are up for sale. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with this Target thing, but the turnover in these units is pretty dramatic. And my wife and I have been on the hunt for, you know, what's next, once the nest is fully empty. because we have no interest in having a house in the next couple of years, but, so
mm-hmm.
yep. It'd be nice to get a place where we could just lock the door and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we'll have more opportunity to do that.
No more lawn mowing and snow shoveling.
Yeah. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah,
it is.
So Best Buy, web sales climbed 10%.
Yeah, I noticed this. Yeah, it was good. It was outpaced the rest of the market. So that's good. They're, you know, they need to obviously grow their online sales, and they're successful in doing that. So, you know, I just wanted to put this in. This is from a one of the retail industry publications, internet retailer. So,
well, the only thing that
good news.
The only thing that I don't know from this article and also other things that I've read is how much of this is their sales and how much of it is through their affiliates.
Yeah, I don't think they would disclose that, but I would hazard to guess that 80-90% of this is their direct sales.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that their affiliates are doing that much measurable business online, I could be wrong.
Did you determine from this article what percentage of overall Best Buy sales are online, or that do they just continue to try to hide that?
Well, it's $3.5 billion, so.
Oh, you can do simple math then.
Yeah, then you can look at their total, you know, what they totally did.
Wait a minute, Graham, was that an indictment of Tim's math skills?
Well, I was just trying to figure it in my head, because are they like 50 billion total sales now, or are they beyond that by now, I suppose?
Well, down further, it says that for the 3 months ended on the end of January, that $14.2 billion was their top line revenue.
Oh, okay. And the online revenue was
3.5 of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good percentage. I can't figure it out in my head right now. But my point that I was going to make was, is it true that their online sales as a percent of the total is higher than Target's? Did I read that Target's is not really that good, their online sales percentage?
Not yet. It's improving. Yeah. Target is going up because they're putting more resources to try to develop that.
Oh,
but Best Buy is ahead of Target in online sales.
Yeah.
And I think it's partially to do with they've been more aggressive for several years, and partially because they sell electronic items that lend themselves to online sales.
There you go. Yep. And so, higher transactions, higher dollar volume. Yep. Plus, they have definitely been pouring the coal, on the fire as far as money invested. Best Buy has, and now Target is ramping that up too.
Yeah. I did hear that Target is laying off people in Bangalore, which is where most of their technology is done. Mm-hmm. And some of the retail analysts are speculating at this point, because we haven't seen anything, that they're going to discontinue or greatly curtail all of their custom development that they've been doing in favor of getting package solution from somebody. So whether they go back to Amazon for their web or, you know, buy some other kind of platform is still unknown. But if they're going to downsize Bangalore, it probably means that, a lot of their internal development is not going to be custom anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny how companies go, it cycles around, right, Steve?
Yeah,
I mean, they go from, package solutions to bring it in-house, and they go back to package solution. I mean, Best Buy went through that a few times too, I think.
Well, there was a point in time though that they were really pushing the envelope, trying different things, and it seems like they're doing a lot more blocking and tackling now. Doesn't it?
Yep.
I mean, just focusing on the basics, and let's get the stores right, and let's get the online sales right, and then we can try all these other social media experiments and so on. So,
they came out and said they're going to really focus on apps and things like style, and was it kids, and what I found interesting is wellness products. They called out too as an area of focus. The CEO did in the conference call, I believe. So they're definitely looking at some specific areas where they're going to focus to turn it around.
Yep.
Continue the turnaround.
Well, I was really interested in this next story, which is of a young woman. What? No, but her name's Carrie Severson, and she founded Walkway, a service that aims to place free treadmill workstations in public spaces. And it's all about, you know, because treadmill desk, she was using a treadmill desk. She's a fitness fanatic and wanted to put them in places where people normally just sit and they would instead get on treadmills. And I think, well, so how in the world is this thing going to be monetized? I mean, obviously with advertisements, but.
Did you just say advertisements?
I did.
Oh, so British. It's adverts.
It's an advertisement.
Advertisements. Well, soon I'll be saying aluminium.
And schedule. Let's keep on schedule.
Yes. My favorite, though, is it's a dog's breakfast.
So advertisements. When was the last time you said the word advertisements? I've always heard you say advertisements.
Well, I don't know.
You never cease to amaze me.
I'm trying to be she.
You're so continental. You're a Renaissance man.
Well, and that's why I'm wearing black sweats today.
To answer your question, Steve.
Yes.
Earlier about monetization, I believe after looking at their website that their monetization strategy is to sell treadmills to people.
Oh.
Okay.
Up to $3,000. Heavy use is $29.99.
Really?
The TR-5000.
Wow.
You can get into it for about $1,300.
I'd like to call out to my, call out some props to my business partner and friend and now colleague at BuzzFeed, Graham Wood, who hacked himself a workstation treadmill with a 2x4 and a piece of plywood. So,
yeah. Wow. I did too. The other Graham did that too. Remember?
Yeah, that's right. That. You did do that.
What?
Yeah,
so, what?
I did that in 2010, and I still use it all the time.
And what, just an old treadmill, or what do you do?
No, it wasn't an old treadmill. It was a fairly new treadmill, but I bought some wood and made a shelf and turned it into a treadmill desk, about $20.
Now a workstation.
Yes. Nice.
Workstation for probably half of the money, right?
I saw a tweet from Jay, what's his name, at Business Insider, and blank on his last name. And he said, I'm looking to try to build my own treadmill desk, and I'm looking for ideas. And I immediately dragged out my old photo and sent it to him and said, hey, I did this for $20, five years ago, and I still use it. And he thanked me, so... People are doing that, I mean, it's a trend for sure.
Well, we went out and bought a treadmill at Second Wind Exercise this winter, and we also bought an elliptical, which my wife hurts her back, so she wants to sell it now.
Just Steve, I suppose the question here would be then, why buy new when slightly used?
That's right.
Although he sells new stuff now too, that guy.
Well, only it's when the deals are this good.
It's almost
he's been doing the ads for years. And what's funny is for a guy that runs a fitness outfit, he doesn't look very fit.
He's not. But anyway, the reason I brought it up is that I looked at a treadmill desk and I really liked it a lot. And I said, how much is this? And it was $3,500. And so they had one for $1,500, but I still thought, oh my God, that's a lot of dough.
You know, when we were out looking for space for our new office, we looked at a place. Oh, geez, I can't even remember the name of the group now, but they had put in a bunch of treadmill desks for the employees.
Yeah,
and they were all down in the basement stored because
nobody used them. Oh, geez.
I bet you I could get a really good deal on a treadmill desk here. I don't know. I just think that, the best form of exercise is get away from your frickin' computer. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, but there are times though that, I'm like me right now, I could spend 6 or 8 hours a day just sitting in front of my machine doing work. And so I have to force myself to get up and move around.
So you're buying into that whole sitting is the new smoking thing?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No question.
They've got a worse line than that, Phil. Sitting is the new cancer, which is a great line when you're trying to sell treadmill desks.
That's right.
Scare the shit out of people.
All right. Hey, let's get to some other stories. There were some other
sitting tumor.
Some other things were going on this week, right?
No.
Indeed.
So it seems like Netflix has done a little bit of a flip-flop on net neutrality.
A little bit.
Well, I don't know. I think that anybody would like to say, yeah, we wish we had to go the route of FCC oversight. You know, everybody would much prefer an industry that regulates itself, but that clearly wasn't happening. So,
yeah.
Well, I don't think it's going to be put into law anyway. There'll be plenty of court challenges. So I'm not going to get too up in arms about it. But it's kind of funny that Netflix is now saying, oh, wait a minute, we didn't mean that much, you know, regulation.
Yeah, but if you read the article, they did couch it, by, you know, by the corporate line came back saying, well, that's not really what we were talking about.
Well, I think what they're concerned about is that their caches inside of data centers and their transit deals that they have, which do impact on the performance for customers, will be thrown out. So they'll be illegal. And if that happens, their business will be destroyed. And that's one of the concerns I have about the whole thing, because it's not neutral what they're doing right now.
Well, see, I don't know about Time Warner, but do you remember Comcast built those massive storage facilities at their cable head end? And I know they did it in Colorado and the Twin Cities. I'm not sure where else, but it was all about doing exactly that, which was to cache things locally and stream locally.
Right. Well, they don't accept the Netflix cache, which is in the data centers of, I believe Time Warner has it, and some other big ISPs, where they put terabytes of movies there so they can stream within their network and not have to do it over the internet.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing will probably, if this goes into effect, and again, I don't think it will, but if it did, that and the transit agreements, which they have purchased with Comcast and Verizon and others to ensure that their streams, you know, go to their customers. If those get thrown out as being non-neutral, which they will have to because they aren't, then their performance of their service will go down dramatically. And I think that's what they're concerned about.
Well, I think we should just turn the internet off.
Yeah. So. Let's go back to discs, you know? Those DVDs and Blu-rays, they're pretty good.
Compact Disc Interactive, CDI. Let's go back to that.
Yeah.
What a dismal failure.
Well, talk about a dismal failure.
What?
Were we?
This whole thing about Google and their wireless service? I mean, come on. This is like science fiction.
You really think so? Because you know what? I mean, why is Xfinity, for example, Comcast was putting out, for every router, Wi-Fi router that they install, they automatically set up the public Wi-Fi portion of it so that, you know, they can have this ubiquitous Xfinity network everywhere. Isn't that the same strategy?
I don't know. So anyway, the Wall Street Journal was reporting that, they're going to basically become a wireless carrier. And then later in the week, it came out that, well, it's going to be only one phone and it's going to be switching between Wi-Fi, Sprint, and T-Mobile. So maybe they mean that it's LTE Sprint and LTE T-Mobile, which means that the chipsets won't be that hard to do. But if it's switching to a CDMA network and to a GSM network, I mean, that seems to be a bit kludgy.
I don't think they do the latter. That'd be crazy. Yeah.
So it's all LTE. So they have coverage by having two providers. And then so I guess what this would be everything's over IP. So there's no voice section.
Yep.
They're doing voice over IP. And maybe it makes sense.
Well, I'll see if I can find a link to this article from the Mobile World Congress where they were talking about the future of mobile. Or of mobile networks, excuse me. And, you know, what was happening with speeds and so on and so forth. But one of the things in this article that they talked about was that there will be a shift to data only. And the expectation is it's going to happen faster than anyone believes. Because the old projection was 7 to 9 years from now. And now they're saying 3 to 5 that we'll see a global shift toward VoIP, basically all to be all data centric.
Well, it looks like T-Mobile is trying to jumpstart that with the launching LTE in the unregulated Wi-Fi spectrum.
Yeah.
Well, this is so that was another story I stuck in there.
I think this is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. What happens to my trusty old Razor? Will I not be able to use my Razor in the future?
Maybe not.
Maybe I'll have to go on Old Folks Network. We still support your old phones.
Well, so Forbes had an article about the iPhone 6S is reportedly going to have the Apple SIM in it. So it'll have 2 gigs of RAM and the Apple SIM pre-installed. And for those listening that don't know what the Apple SIM is, it was something that was placed into one of the versions of the iPad to allow that SIM to automatically be used anywhere in the world.
Yeah, all the carriers hate this, by the way.
I know they do. Because they all want their own proprietary SIM.
Yeah, well, they want it to be hard to, you know, to switch. And if you have a service that in software you can switch providers whenever you want, that makes you less sticky.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. And I hate being less sticky.
Yeah. Apple will, they've already disrupted the industry quite significantly, so they'll probably continue that that trajectory.
Well, but, you know, what if they push too hard? They're going to get pushback from the mobile carriers. You know, if they really threaten them with obsolescence or severe disruption, they're going to push back pretty hard.
Yeah. I think that the mobile carriers are going to be too interested in all their lawsuits against net neutrality. So,
yeah.
Right. Because they're the people that are really disrupted in the whole deal, you know, significantly.
Yeah. True.
So they're going to be suing up the wazoo.
Well, so you put this article in here about Google quietly backs away from encrypting new Lollipop devices by default. And I thought this was almost a fait accompli, where that Google was really going to focus on doing end-to-end encryption, but they were dipping their toe in the water, and now this sort of seems like they're kind of backing away from that. Do you think they're getting a lot of pressure from the government?
Oh, I imagine they would be, yeah. And so they probably, you know, I don't know, but I suspect that there's some deal with the government anyway on their main search business. And different than Apple is kind of, at least publicly, saying to the government, we're not going to do what you want us to do. You know, we're going to do what's right for the customer first. And, you know, and looks like Google is the other way around.
See, I think these companies have to do that because, you know what, if Apple was not doing that publicly, whether or not I'm sure there's not a back door, but whether or not there's some way in is unknown because we can't get into the code. But they would be unable to sell in China. You know, right. I'm sure other countries too. And the same thing's holding true for Google, even though Google has less of a footprint in China.
But Google's is not closed source. It's open source software. So
right.
Everyone can look into it and see if there's back doors.
Right.
So that is in their favor. But I think that there's back doors into their main search product. So the NSA and other agencies can look into that.
Yeah, they just want to see what the trends are.
Yeah.
They want to see what people are looking for and searching on. And well, I mean, you know, I mean, how many times have you watched some miscellaneous crime show on TV and they're like, yes, well, we looked through somebody's history and we found that they were searching on, you know, how to murder your baby. And of course they're being held up for murdering their baby. They were arrested for it, you know? So, I mean, it's,
So you've been watching CSI Cyber?
I haven't seen it. No. Is it good?
No, it's terrible.
Is it?
No, it's horrendous.
Oh,
it's sort of like, what's that other one? Scorpion. So I sat in for about 20 minutes of Scorpion. It was a random episode. It was probably the second or third one. And that is such a bunch of baloney. I couldn't even watch it. I turned it off. I mean, they just get all the tech wrong. And, gosh.
Yeah, but yeah, they got to make it sexy, dude.
I understand that. But yeah, CSI Cyber. I mean, if you like CSI, it's CSI on the internet. And what's her name? Patricia Arquette is actually pretty good. But really other good. Than that,
of course it's good.
Yeah. Well, she just won Academy Award too. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you know, I think we should skip over a couple of these stories about the Pebble smartwatch and the Apple Watch. I mean, you know. We're gonna know more on Monday. Yes. But
the Pebble sold an awful lot. 15 million is a lot.
Yeah. Well, I
that's a big deal. And yeah. I'd be tempted to get another Pebble.
Yeah, I mean, the new one looks cool.
But my ideal watch right now would be the Apple Watch with a circular form factor rather than the square. But
all right, so
get what you want.
So let's do some speculation on the event next week, the Apple event. And I stuck this HBO story in because I think that part of the event will be at least an update of the Apple TV and HBO Now, which is their subscription over the top service for HBO, where you don't have to have a cable subscription.
$15 a month. Yep.
$15. And they're going to be part of that solution. And that completely makes sense to me.
Yep. Yep. I agree.
So it's going to be the Apple Watch. And I think it will be the Apple TV. And there will be some functionality. I mean, Cook has already said, you know, he uses the Apple Watch to control his Apple TV. So there'll be some connectivity, you know, between them. And I think that this Apple TV will be pretty significant.
Well, I hope they do have an app store, because I got to tell you, Tim, that the Roku being able to go in and load up all these other apps and so on is really terrific. And the Roku is actually very, very responsive. The Apple TV, after the last couple of software updates, has gotten a little flaky.
Yeah, so, you'll have to buy it. You'll have to buy a new one.
I'll have to buy three new ones. I've got three of them in the house. So, yeah. But the thing I love about the Apple TV is I can stream music to all of them. I've got a little app called Airfoil, and when we have people over to the house, or we have, you know, during the holidays or whatever, I'll stream music, and this little Airfoil app somehow synchronizes the audio. It takes care of the latency. So if you're in the family room and you walk in the dining room, I mean, it's all connected. It all sounds the same. And so it's pretty cool. Anyway,
poor man's Sonos.
Well, it really is. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I already had speaker systems all over the house. So why was I going to go out and buy a Sonos when that's really all I'd want to do with it? So this is a great solution, because the app was like $20. So it's just great. But I think this HBO strategy is very cool. It's just that what I don't want to get into is paying $15 for that, and then $15 for Showtime, and then $15 for, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden you add that all up and you're like, geez, I'm at like $180 a month. It'd be cheaper to go cable.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's going to be if you want all of those, the cable will still be the way to do it. But if you only want one of those, so if you only want over the air and HBO, that you got it.
Well, my daughter, you know, I bought her a HD antenna so that she could get over the air live TV, which frankly, the quality is better than over cable, unless the weather's bad. But if she had just an antenna, Hulu, and HBO, she's done. It's all she needs. And so... Yep. She doesn't need to buy cable.
A lot of people, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love this this last story because of Graham.
For Graham to go on a rant.
Uh-oh. Oh yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, see, I told you guys. I told you what Etsy was doing, and Wired published a great story. Etsy lost its soul. But that doesn't matter to its IPO.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, they're going for the,
didn't know it.
They're going, they're going for the big bucks on an IPO. And I wish them a lot of luck, because e-commerce IPOs haven't been great lately.
Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. But yeah, they made a big switch, I guess, really a year and a half or more ago, where they are no longer about handmade goods. They're essentially allowing anything to be sold there, like eBay, which a lot of people say eBay is turning into a Chinese marketplace. My wife uses it, and just it's crazy how they've cheapened it and ruined it. You know, a lot of sellers have left eBay. In fact, many have in disgust. And now this article is talking about how, you know, Etsy sellers are doing the same thing. You know, they're walking away from something that they thought was about them when it really isn't. It's about money, but you know, that's what it's all comes down to, I guess. Follow the money, right?
Right.
Well, maybe there is a place in the market for a hippie eBay. That's what Etsy is.
Well, yeah, if that's the way they want to position themselves, there are buyers leaving eBay that are looking for another place to go. And, you know, there, I'm sure, are a lot of vertical kinds of marketplaces that are sucking up some of those disgusted eBay sellers. And Etsy will benefit from that to a certain extent, I guess.
Say one story that we skipped over that I put back in, that I just wanted to touch on before we launch into anything else, is that the Microsoft Office 2016 preview for Mac, because I have this Retina iMac, and I got to tell you, it is fabulous. I am really, really impressed. And what's really interesting to me is how Microsoft is now pushing corporate customers, small to mid-sized businesses specifically, toward Outlook.com to set up hosted email rather than license Exchange server and put it in their own data center or have it in a hosted data center, that they're pushing them toward cloud-based use. And I don't know. I'm really starting to dramatically shift my opinion toward what Microsoft is doing and what they're accomplishing. And so this, I would really encourage, if anybody's got a Mac, to go to the Mac preview and download it, access it and just try it out.
I haven't tried it. Have you tried it yet, Steve?
Yeah.
How different is it from Office 2011?
It's a lot different, but it's,
I'm sure it's 5 years different, but
yeah. I mean, it depends on what you do. I mean, I always tell people that if you're going to be in a company and you're going to work in the finance department, that you don't want to use the Mac, because if you're going to be using pivot tables in a spreadsheet or Visual Basic, it's not going to be it's not going to be pretty. But for 90% of what most people do, it's perfect. And this is, I guess I can't do a review on it because I haven't spent that much time in it. But I like the fact that they've got connections to OneDrive. I know a lot of people that use SharePoint in their businesses, so having a connection to that is interesting. So we'll see.
And the full Retina support, right?
Right. Yep. So it looks
great.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, Phil. What?
Did you close that barn door?
No, I believe I left it open.
You did?
Oh, no.
Steve's security tip of the week.
Yep, I did.
Oh, my God. Thanks a lot. The horse is gone now.
Phil.
Well, this is actually a really easy tip. And the reason I know I've talked about these two apps before, but I'm bringing it up again because there was just a shift that was made in an app called Signal. And Signal is an app that allows you to make free encrypted calls to other Signal users. And if your Android friends have Redphone, you can now make encrypted voice calls to their Redphone app. But the change this week in the update was the fact that now you can do text messages that are also end-to-end encrypted. And they use perfect forward security, or perfect forward secrecy, which means that it's a rotating encryption key. So unlike iMessage on iOS, for example, and the Mac, you're essentially using a private public key, but it doesn't change. And so, you know, you could get into it and then you could see all the texts, but for every single message, it changes with perfect forward secrecy. And so that's a huge change. So if you have secure things that you need to send to others or have conversations about things, and companies, I think, are really interested in this because, you know, you obviously want to protect your trade secrets. And so rather than having to go out and buy the black phone from Silent Circle or something like that, I mean, here you've got a lot of opportunity to try this out. So
like Tim Cook and Johnny Ive would be using this to text each other?
I would think they would. That's right.
Yep. And yeah. Eddie Q and yeah.
So that's my tip. Go and download these apps. They're no charge. They are free.
So give it a shot. Yeah. I love when you come up with free stuff.
Me too.
Outstanding.
Me
Outstanding.
Too.
Unlike our cool things of the week, which cost real dough.
Well, let's talk about cool things of the week. Graham, since you brought it up, you gotta start, buddy.
Well, you know, obviously I saw the rumor. We'll find out how if true it is or if it's even true that the 12-inch Retina MacBook Air could be announced in Monday's Apple event. Apparently the source isn't all that reliable in the past, but I'm sure hoping it's going to be announced because it's probably going to be my next laptop. So I'm looking forward to that. Of course it would be announced, but it wouldn't be available maybe for weeks or a month or whatever, but that's my hopeful cool thing of the week.
Can I interject with one question? And I'm just kind of curious what you guys think. The more I think about this 12-inch, you know, there's an 11-inch and there's a 13-inch. Mm-hmm. And having a 12-inch Retina is interesting, but I can't believe that they're just going to do a laptop that sort of fits in between those two, that it has to be something different. And, you know, is this going to be the first hybrid, like we talked about last week? Tim, you talked about this too, but, you know, is it going to be the first hybrid iOS, Mac OS X machine?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I'd love it if they did it. I'd love a machine that you could pull it, you know, off and it's just the screen and it turns into iOS and it's an iPad and then you put it back in and dock it in and it's full OS X. I think that would be awesome. But Apple's never going to do that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've gathered too, is that if it's coming, it's not anytime soon.
Yeah,
but I don't think they'll ever do that. I think they'll converge the OSs before they're going to have some multifunction device. But, I mean, frankly, that's why I'm very interested in these Surface tablets, because that's what they've done. They basically have a full desktop in a tablet that you can operate either way. So, I mean, what Microsoft is doing, I think, is very savvy and solves a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Yep.
So, but Apple just doesn't operate that way. I wish they did. Maybe they will. I don't know. But I can't believe that this is going to be anything but a really nice 12-inch laptop.
Okay. All right, Tim, you're talking, so just keep talking about your cool thing.
All right. Going to the geekiest cool thing of the week. Well, maybe not, because Phil's got a really geeky one too. Yep. But this is called Icarus, which is a car computer that's powered by a Raspberry Pi. You can either buy it as a kit and put it together yourself. You can buy it. Well, in fact, you have to buy it as a kit and put it together yourself. But you can buy the component pieces. So if you already have a Raspberry Pi and you want to build one of these things, you can, you know, just get the case and get the, you know, the other pieces of this. And it really kind of puts everything together to put an in-dash system that you can play media, you can do navigation, you can interfaces with your car through the car computer to show you, you know, notifications.
Well, and there's three USB slots.
Yep. You can charge your smartphone if you want. So it's a very geeky in-dash system, kind of half DIY, half you know, something that's, you know, someone's come up with. I just noticed it on Google Plus this week in the Raspberry Pi forum, and I thought, That is my cool thing this week.
That
the
is
Icarus.
Cool.
Terrible name, but it's actually a pretty good idea.
Isn't it? Wouldn't it be Icarus? Icarus?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be Icarus. Maybe they're flying too close to the sun.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking at the dash installation kit for the Toyota Prius, so I can see what it would look like if it was installed in my Prius.
Oh.
So that's kind of interesting.
Does it look like you're a real super geek in the Prius?
No.
He is a real super geek. He looks like a super
geek. No, it doesn't actually. It's just, it looks just like a nice display. And, interesting. Yeah. Anyway.
Huh. No, all right. Interesting. Yeah. It's good to see this kind of thing happening.
Yeah. All right, Phil, what's your geek thing? Your cool thing of the week?
My geek thing? My cool thing of the week. I saw this pop up on a couple of different, posts. One was, you know, the Engadget piece that I think that I've linked to here, but also it was part of the mobile, came out of the Mobile Congress in Barcelona. The Runcible, which is called the anti-smartphone. And if you take a look at the Runcible, it's a circular connected device that is, yes, a smartphone, but it sort of is trying to minimize the amount of crap you get on your smartphone. And it's also circular in shape and has kind of a smooth rounded back to it, sort of a Zen-like feel to it. And I think it looks really kind of cool. It's a little bit quieter gadget, they say. It'll more discreetly provides information about your notifications and things like that. And I think it looks kind of cool. It's kind of like a new age hip pocket watch.
Yeah, it's a pocket watch smartphone.
Runs the Mozilla Firefox OS.
Yep.
And
I see this having huge application for connected hockey. This is IoT comes to hockey.
You'd need a.
They already tried
a new case.
Hockey once, didn't they? Did they try the? Remember, wasn't it Fox that tried the little chip in the puck that allowed them to track the puck?
Oh yeah,
you remember that? Okay.
Yeah.
It used to be this little blur of red or whatever.
It shows up on the screen when you're watching. Yeah.
Miserably failed.
You know what else miserably failed is there was a softball that had a light in it.
Right.
And we went over to Miller Park in Eden Prairie when the kids were little, and we played with this softball, and we were on the diamond at night. So it was really dark over there. And so we were hitting the ball, and you know, and here goes Alex, and he's running after the ball, and he falls in a hole. You know, it's like he's crying and all that. You know, he was fine, but I thought, boy, that seemed like a really good idea. but in practice, it didn't really go over that well.
You don't need to have the lighted field, really.
Oh my gosh!
All right, it's time for Steve's.
Well, mine is a free app. It's called Slow Fast Slow. It's a variable slow motion app. And I know people use a lot of different slow motion apps. You know, there's one built into the iPhone and so on. The only thing about this app is if you slow it down too much, you see a little bit of flicker if you don't have enough light. But it's just really cool because you can literally move these lines up and down and change the video speed. It's very, very intuitive. And it's a free app, so it's very cool. And in fact, these are the same guys that make the Glyph, which is a little tripod holder for the iPhone. And when you open up the app, it encourages you to go to buy it. And I was going to buy one anyway. And so I bought it through the app using Apple Pay. So I ordered that today. But the app is really fun. I've been playing with the app a little bit. So give it a shot.
Okay.
Ready.
There we go.
Well, there's a bunch of new upcoming events.
But there's only two that are important.
Right.
Say you, Mr. Mobile March.
That's right. Guy. That's right. There's only two that are important. Mobile March on the 26th. Get your tickets now. And then also
IoT Fuse, Internet of Things Fuse. We're going to fuse Internet of Things together. And we've got welders and we'll have, no, I'm kidding.
There'll be no explosions like down in Lakeville.
That's exactly right. We're about 80% registered, and there's only a few. It's on March 19th, so only a few days left. One of the events that I put in here, a couple of them, Entrepreneurs Rally 4, which looks kind of interesting. Yet another entrepreneur event where you can go in and learn and so on. But then also the Minnesota Interactive Marketing Association had something that I thought was one of the most compelling topics yet. Brand storytelling in a digital world.
Love that.
You know, we all, as humans, we all learn best through storytelling. You know, you can talk and talk and talk, but then when you stop and you say, and you know, one day I was doing such and such, you know, and my wife and kids, and we were taking this photo, and, you know, we saw this guy fall off the bridge. You know, you forget everything that the person talked about, but you're like, oh, I remember that story. Sure. Yeah. You were there taking a picture, a selfie, and this guy fell off the bridge. He was fine, but, you know, they remember the story. And so what stories do you want to tell about your brand?
And so, ladies and gentlemen, we've just heard a really long story about the brand storytelling in a digital world.
That's right.
You'll think about it now and say, what was that event about somebody falling off a bridge that we were going to go see?
That's right. That's right. MEMA, brand storytelling in a digital world. Okay.
There you go. Thank you. Good night.
Okay. All right. Anyway. All right. See, I Phil, what would I do if you weren't keeping me on track?
I know. I'm here to help.
I don't know.
my chosen role, smart yeah. ass jour. Yeah. So, let's see, mini bar coming up on the 11th, mini webcon coming up. What else?
I came with
lots of good stuff. Yes.
I came up with one that I learned about, a med tech investing conference.
Oh,
on
yeah.
May 6th at the Lowe's Minneapolis Hotel downtown. So
that's a very nice.
Biggie,
nice
yeah.
Hotel. It's the only place that I've actually seen a Bentley and a Porsche Panamera sitting out front.
Yeah, I walked by it to go to Kiernan's for the happy hour after the Capital call, and I noted that it is a fancy place.
It is. It is. So no jeans.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right, you guys. Lots of stuff happened this week, and more will happen next week. And we'll cover it all on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Yes, we will.
All right. Take care, boys.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks. Thanks.